The Equity Foundation is the professional development arm of MIA Equity and Equity New Zealand. Each year, the Equity Foundation delivers more than 100 masterclasses, workshops, film screenings, In Conversations, international scholarships and on-set internships free of charge for Equity members. We give our thanks to our principal sponsor, Media Super.
Hi, as you know, my name is Alex Jones here from the Equity Foundation, and today I've got the very great pleasure in introducing Kim Jackson. Now, before we commence, I would like to acknowledge the Gadigal people of the Eora Nations and pay my respects to all the traditional owners of country and all throughout our country, and recognise their continuing connection to land, waters and culture, and that this always was and always will be Aboriginal land. And we pay our respects to elders past and present. I want to take a minute to thank the Equity Foundation's principal sponsor, Media Super. Media Super has supported the foundation since the early 2000s. They are your industry super fund. They know everything you need to know about building your superannuation, and also they're available to give financial advice. So don't hesitate to contact them, and of course, I can help you with contact details. Okay, so please welcome Kim, and thank you.
Welcome to Marketing Materials That Get You Auditions. Thank you. But first of all, guys, thank you so much to Alex and the MEAA. You guys are amazing, bringing in so many amazing, so much awesome education and so many great instructors for all of the members. It's a really wonderful union to be involved with, and I absolutely love you guys. So thank you so much. Welcome to Marketing Materials That Get You Auditions. It is actually course two, part one of something called the Secret Actor Society Journey. My name is Kim Jackson. So one of the big things I always say is make sure you look people up before you learn things from them. There's a lot of misinformation in the industry, and it's really important to look people up on Google, look them up on IMDb, make sure they have worked in the industry, and also make sure that they are currently working in the industry if possible, because obviously this is a digital age. The industry is changing so quickly. It is really important to know who is telling you advice. We've all taken advice from that actor in acting class who maybe we shouldn't have taken advice from and wasted a whole bunch of time. So let's not do that. So I'm an actor. I've done 60 feature films and TV series. I just worked on one 2 weeks ago out in Western Australia with opposite Daisy Ridley. What? Check out We Bury the Dead in about 9 months when it comes out. I am definitely working in the industry. I'm an author, a speaker, and a coach. So I've mentored and coached hundreds of actors. I've presented seminars for thousands of live audience members. And I also wrote a textbook. I do not recommend writing a textbook. It is exhausting and it takes up a lot of energy. And if you are a perfectionist, it will slowly kill you. But anyway, I've done it now. So you guys get to read it if you ever would like to. I highly recommend it. It comes free as part of Secret Actor Society membership, so you don't need to purchase it if you're an SAS member. And hi to all our members that are in the seminar today. Hello. I'm also a founder. I'm the founder of the Secret Actor Society. I won't go into it because I want to get to the content for you guys. I'll talk about it a little bit later, but we have a whole online membership site for actors. Our entire goal is to get actors more work. And that comes from all of these wonderful things. We have a great community. Everyone is so cool. We do monthly Zooms where we do Q&As and career coaching in a big group. And then we have action steps that come out on the reg, weekly if you get them done straight away. But that kind of mimic one-on-one coaching, because I don't want people to have to spend a whole bunch of money doing one-on-one coaching with me. So this is kind of the equivalent. If you hear licking in the background, it is my dog on the ground underneath me. So I want to apologize for that. And the SAS journey. So this is what you're currently in. We're at this class is Marketing Materials That Get You Auditions. It is part of a, well, it was supposed to be a 10-part series, but then I keep adding like 2.1, 2.2. So it's a 10-part series, but it has probably around 12 or 13 courses at this point that literally walk you through how to build your career as an actor in the industry. They're all part of our Secret Actor Society membership. So marketing materials that get you auditions, we are going to go through the basic fundamentals. And the reason for this is, you know, especially if you've been around for a while, it's really easy to just go, oh, well, all my stuff's just fine, whatever. And you sort of, you forget that 10 years ago when you created it all, maybe you weren't as aware of what you could be doing or the potential for those marketing materials to be as eye-catching and grabbing and professional as they could be. And then, of course, for new actors, this will set you up with all the information you need. Now, for a lot of these things, we do have templates and stuff in the members section. So for anyone who's a Secret Actor Society member, if you just go through to your member resources page, you can grab, like, for instance, a resume template and examples of a few of the spreadsheets in the demo section and stuff like that. But here it is. We go through resume. We're going to talk through headshots, your demo. It's really simple, guys. Like, everyone likes to overcomplicate the whole acting thing, but really it's just fundamental marketing materials done right is what we need as actors so that we just look professional. There's only so much content a person can kind of take on as they're deciding whether to bring you in for an audition. So we really don't need that much stuff. We just need to do the few things that we do need in a professional manner. So resume, headshots, demo, marketing online, so that's casting websites, etc. Exchanging info, so that's more at live events and networking events. And that's it. So let's get into it. Resume. So resume, look, resumes haven't changed that much over the years, guys. It's just get the information across very quickly. You can see how large my name is at the top of this. So it's 26 point font or more, which feels very big when you're doing it. Mine is actually really small compared with what I've seen on a lot of resumes, just because I do have a lot of information to get in there. So obviously at the top, notice I've used my agent and manager's logos just for a visual. So it's something that kind of looks a little cleaner and better. So rather than just having their names and phone numbers. So when you do sign with a new agent or manager, make sure that you reach out to them and ask them for a copy of their logo. Because if you pull it off the website, it's going to be low resolution. So just ask them for a copy of their logo so you can add it onto their onto your resume. There is a big distinction between an agent or manager that you trust and an agent or manager that you've signed with just because you were kind of desperate and you needed an agent or manager. So if you trust your representation, if you know that they're great, you feel like they're a really strong person out there in the industry, they have the right connections, they're gonna do right by you, you do not need to put your own contact information on your resume. You can if you want, but the option exists to keep a little barrier for people to reach out. And you can leave that off. Now, look, you're not going to hand a physical resume to people these days. This is going to be something that you're emailing if you're sending an email pitching yourself. So they're already going to have your direct contact info anyway. But if your reps are solid and you have a few credits, I would recommend maybe just leaving that personal info off, because it's your agent and manager that are going to be forwarding this to people. And it might be also uploaded to the casting websites where people can download it from there. You don't really want your kind of personal phone number out there as you become more successful. You do not need, I've got height, weight, eyes. You do not need that. Eyes is actually a leftover from when photos used to be black and white. I put it in because I like my height, weight, and eyes, and I think it's an asset. I just have it in there. I don't really know. There's not really any rhyme or reason to it. You do not need to put it in. Obviously, your weight is absolutely nobody's business, but height can be very relevant. So that is helpful. Again, I think that's something that they can have a conversation with you about during the submission process. Probably doesn't need to be on your resume. So then the five main sections that you want to always have on a resume: television or series. So the reason you would do is, so choose your strongest section to put first. So you can put film first, or you can put television or series first. I have television first because television credits can be more recognizable. Feature films, even when they're successful, some people may not know the name of the film unless it's a really big successful film. Even if the film does well, it's in theaters, whatever, people may not have heard of it. So it's easier. Everyone kind of knows NCIS. So for me, it's a little easier if I put NCIS or SWAT or American Crime Story on my resume in a prominent position. That's going to make people go, oh, she's worked in top quality projects. So she's an actress that's probably worth seeing. Feature films, you know, some of these feature films are, you know, did pretty well, and yet still people may not know the names of them. So if you do have strong TV credits that are recognizable, pop that section at the top. Now, the reason I say television or series is because television, you know, television's great. Television is a style of series. Now, these days, obviously, we have web series. Now, you don't really want to put a separate section for web series. It's like a whole thing. And it kind of doesn't, image-wise, it doesn't quite look as cool as a television series that like got put out there, unless, again, it's a really successful web series. So I would recommend, if you do have some web series and some TV credits, or even if you've only got web series, put series rather than television, because then everything falls under that category. And you could have your NCIS, your Home and Away, whatever it is, next to the three web series you did in one category. And then it all kind of feels just easier to read and more cohesive. For commercials, don't put them on your theatrical resume. Everything I teach is film and television, because I haven't really worked in commercials very much. All of my commercial auditions have come through my agent. I haven't proactively pursued that as an industry in a non wait for the phone to ring kind of way. So for me, everything I teach is film and TV. For a film and TV resume, keep your commercials separate. And that also goes for your demo reel and any other marketing material. Commercials are just a whole separate thing. Do not mix them in together at any point in your marketing materials. Unless, and the one exception is, if you don't have a lot of film and TV footage and you did a commercial where you're acting, really acting, not just saying like a line or a word or having a moment. Like if you're doing something, especially comedy, if you need comedy footage and you have something in a commercial that's really funny, or a scene in a commercial that could almost pass for a scene in a film or TV show, edit it really tightly so there's no fat on either side of the clip. And then hopefully it will just seamlessly fit in there and people won't really notice that it's from a commercial, but you don't want to highlight that it's from a commercial on your film and TV resume, unless commercials are all you have, in which case obviously work with what you have. Though to be honest, for film and TV on a demo reel, I would say you'd be better to do a few self-tapes and show what you can really do in a scene, rather than putting up a bunch of commercial clips just to show that you've worked, because who cares. So editable, I mean, you care, we care, but people hiring us might not as much. Editable template in member. Oh, yeah. So there's an editable template of this for the members. If you guys want to grab that, it's just under the member resources section. So training. Now, I didn't put theater because my theater resume isn't that cool. Honestly, I haven't really done that much theater. I did some when I was younger, haven't done a lot lately. So again, this is an example of lead with your strengths. You don't have to put theater just because it's on the list of things that are in a standard resume. For a lot of actors, if you haven't done a lot of feature films or TV series, maybe theater's a section that will be a good example of what kind of roles you can be casting, because a lot of casting directors are extremely theater savvy. A lot of them went through drama school at university or are at least familiar with the big plays. So if you've done, you know, anything, you know, any major play that someone would know the name of, absolutely put it on your resume. And in the role section where it says recurring or supporting, you would put the character name, because, you know, everybody knows who, you know, the type of actor you would be if you were cast as Puck in Midsummer Night's Dream. You know what I mean? And actually that's just reminded me of something. In television, there are a small group of options for your resume. So you're either a series regular if you're in as a contract regular on the show. If you do more than one episode, but you're not a contract regular, then your credit is recurring. If you did a big guest role on a show where you had, say, more than maybe two scenes, and in the USA, this is contracted, so it will say whether you are a guest star or a co-star, but there is no contract for recurring. So you're either going to be a recurring guest star or a recurring co-star. Either way, you put recurring on your resume. If you are a guest star, that's quite a few scenes. If you're a co-star, that's kind of like being a day player where you just come in for like, you know, under 50 words, you know, or even an under five kind of thing. That's more of a co-star. So then you would just put co-star for those smaller TV credits. In feature films, it is only supporting or lead. If you have one word in a film, you are a supporting character. So don't try to, you know, all the different things, the nuance. Look, if you wanted to, you could put support lead. So that would be if you were maybe number four on the cast list or number five on the cast list. To be honest, if you know, you would probably, number four would probably put lead. But if, you know, if say for instance, it's a two or a three-hander film and there's three people who are definitely the leads and you're slightly below them, you might say support lead just to kind of distinguish. But for the most part, you're going to say supporting or lead and be really clear about that stuff. Like in We Bury the Dead, this top one here, I was number six on the cast list. So, I mean, I wasn't, but I didn't really feel like I was big enough character to say I was a support lead. So I put supporting. All right. So down to training, you've just put your coach name, the type of class that it was, and then where did you train? It can be good to kind of be specific if it's comedy. People always really like that. And especially if the school is prominent. Now, when you're trying to figure out what to add here, add things that people know the names of. So the bigger schools that you've been to, ones that people are a bit more familiar with, especially if you've been to a drama, like a three-year class, you know, highlight that, put it somewhere prominent. If you've been to NIDA or WAPA or VCA or QUT in the drama program, bold that. Or if you were at Juilliard or Stella Adler, so, you know, somewhere that's sort of a bit more high profile, you know, you might want to pop that in bold. So accents, I put accents because I do a bunch of them. And so that's something to highlight separate from my special skills. You don't need to do that unless you're really, really strong with accents. And then skills. So skills is anything visual, you know, doing Sudoku probably wouldn't go on here, but firearms, weapons, jiu-jitsu. So things that are visual, horse riding, surfing, things that they can use. And that's always something. It's always fun to put something, I haven't done it, but something that stands out down there. Like for instance, if you could do a Rubik's Cube really quickly, that's something where the casting director is going to be like, oh, no way. That's awesome. Now, this is all stuff that isn't as relevant these days because they're not holding your resume in their hand these days. So, but it is still something that might stand out. And if you're going to do a piece of marketing material, you might as well have something in there that's kind of highlightable. Now, the final thing that I want to highlight here, and I've put my social at the bottom, obviously, because it's, you know, it's prominent. You can put your social handle. I think that's probably a really good idea so people can look you up, especially since these days people are very interested in seeing what someone's social media is. It can be helpful if you're trying to be, if you're going to be approved on a network or a studio show, usually they're going to put that through the, I guess it's the public relations department or the legal, well, go through legal actually, just to make sure that your socials don't have anything extremely racist or extremely drug focused or anything really dirty that they don't want to align themselves with as a brand. People, to be honest, unless you've got over like 500,000 followers, people aren't really worried about the size of your social media following. So don't worry about that. You know, unless it's a low budget indie, then they'll be like, hey, she has 100,000 followers. That's cool. It'll help us because we have a zero marketing budget. But social really, you know, they're not, then don't worry about your number of social media followers. If you want to build a social media following, as a performer, and that's something that you enjoy doing as a creative and you think it's a good exercise, then absolutely do it. And it will be an asset for you as an actor. But if it's something where it feels like grinding teeth or nails on a chalkboard every time you go to post on social and you hate it, don't do it. Just focus on your craft, focus on your auditions. You will get work in that way. Social media as an angle is one of so many angles to meet a bunch of filmmakers. You could just as easily spend the exact same amount of time volunteering at film festivals and meeting people that way. So don't feel all this pressure that everyone puts on us as actors to do all this stuff on your socials. But if you do have a social account, obviously keep it current and make sure you're posting regularly. Anyway, point being, put your social media handle on your resume. Union membership up here, so SAG-AFTRA, MEAA, AEA, and you know, you may want to just put the one that's relevant for the resume in that country. So for instance, this is my American resume. If I had my Australian resume, you know, and if you're in MEAA, you would put your MEAA union membership on the top here. So that one thing that I do want to mention before we move on, I have, as mentioned, over 60 feature film and TV series credits. Now, there are not 60 feature film and TV series credits on my resume. I also have over 50 short films. Now, on that note, if you only have shorts or you have very few features, you can just put film and you can combine shorts and features in there together. I put feature films because mine are all features that are on this list. You do not need to put all of your credits on here. And that's something I really want to emphasize. It is quality over quantity. The writing in this resume looks small in this example, but is actually, I believe, 12-point font. And you'll see that in the template if you're using the template. Might be 11, I'm pretty sure it's 12. A lot of casting directors, especially the best casting directors, are older. So you want your resume to be at a size where people can read the writing. Never do a two-page resume. So you just want to put your absolute top highlights. So for me, out of everything I've ever done, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. These are my 8 most prominent feature films. Now, most of them are more recent, but some of them, like Scooby-Doo, of course I want to add that. I just got a residual check from that this morning. I shot it in 2000. I shot it in the year 2000. Oh, no, I think I shot it in like 99 or something. It came out of the year 2000. Anyway. Point being, that's still on my resume just because people know the film. I said one word. Who cares? I barely flashed by the screen. It looks good on my resume. Same with up here. Actually, I don't have This Is Us on my resume because it's a co-star. So over here, it can look better to not show those really tiny one-liners if you've got a lot of stuff to choose from. So again, here, I've picked my top credits that look the best, the most familiar projects, and also the largest roles in those most familiar projects. And also the ones you see over here, CBS, ABC, FX. These are all networks that make it look good. God, I've worked for CBS a lot. I never noticed that. These are all networks that make your resume look good. They legitimize you to an extent. So anyway, that's us wrapped up on resume. We're going to move on. So quality over quantity. 5 sections, film, TV, theater, training, special skills. And put feature film if you have a lot of features, or put series if you don't have a lot of television. Cool. All right. That's resume. So headshots. There are a lot of people who say that you just need one main theatrical headshot. Now, if I just had one main theatrical headshot, I don't think I would be called in for most of the roles that I read for. So for instance, yesterday I had 4 auditions. One of them was for a mom, like a sweet best friend in a rom-com. She's like a cute mom role. So this would be this girl in the bottom right corner. That's the one I'd submit for that. One of them was a super rad car mechanic. Who's just like, yeah, whatever, like, yeah, like really rad kind of character. Now, none of these are the perfect submission, but this here on the left bottom would be right for that. Now, am I likely to get called in for a car mechanic role if I were to submit the bottom right photo? Probably not. Could I play the car mechanic role? Of course I could. I just did it. I feel like I nailed it. But no one would call me in for it if I just had that cute photo on the right and the bottom. And if I had this photo on the top left, would I be called in for a car mechanic? Probably not. Maybe, but less likely than if I have this bottom left photo. Now, What else did I? Oh, well, yesterday I also read for like a sexy voluptuous, and we'll go into having those kinds of characters as well. It's not used in these examples, but it was a, what I'm, my point is, it was a broad spectrum of roles. I read for them all in one day, and it's partly because, and I strongly believe that my career as a character actor is what I do, has been so successful for me, and I've been able to live off it. Obviously it's a roller coaster, but I've mostly been able to live off it. Is because I have all of this diverse range of headshots. Now, this top right character, I play this character a lot. I would say this headshot and the bottom left headshot are the ones that get me brought in the most out of all of my headshots. And I have a lot of headshots. So, you know, if you were casting a lawyer, the bottom right, none of the other three headshots would get you in the room. A businesswoman, top left, you know. If you've got someone really nasty, top right is going to get you in the room. If you've got a character that's really nasty and that's what you need, top right's going to get you in the room. Now, I told the headshot guy, I asked him to light me in a way that made me look scary, make all of the yucky bits on my skin stand out. To be honest, it's funny because these three photos look like they were taken more recently. They're actually older. The bottom right photo is the one that was taken the most recently. Now, the reason for that is lighting is everything. Your headshot photographer is everything. So I obviously look much younger in this bottom right photo. The fringe helps. The facial expression helps. But I'm not worried about it. I'm a character actor. It's great for me if I have all these different options. And I can still replicate these looks. So that all is to say, please branch out and consider shooting your next headshot shoot with some character photos. Now, none of these are in, I'm not in a police uniform. I'm not in a firefighter's outfit or a doctor's outfit. I don't have a stethoscope around my neck. These are all perfectly good headshots. They're just a normal headshot. And as a standalone, you go, oh, okay, that's what she looks like. None of them are like big, super in character kind of, you know, costumey looks. But they show such different people and such different vibrations. And that is why they get me in the room so much. So, okay. So let's go back in. Branding. So, and branding, look, branding's a little bit of a dirty word. We don't like it because everyone says branding. Oh, actors get pigeonholed. I agree. I want to be clear about branding. Any actor can play any role that has the potential to physically suit them. And I know that because several times I have submitted myself with a written pitch or even a phone call to filmmakers where they were casting for a man. And I reached out to them and said, hey, do you think this role could be played by a woman? Any actor can play any role that has the potential to physically suit them. If they are looking for someone who's 6'5" and you are not 6'5", you are probably not going to get that role. So don't feel like you can play absolutely everything, but within reason, you can play everything. If they need someone who's very, very large in stature and you are very, very skinny in stature, you are probably not going to get that role unless maybe there's some reason that the character could be changed. But sometimes it's a thing where they have to, there used to be a show called Cold Case where they had to find the older version and the younger version of the same person. That's going to be completely based on your physical look. So there are restrictions to that, but don't feel like you can't raise your vibration and drop your vibration. Don't feel like you can't play the bad guy and the good guy. Just because your essence has a certain energy to it doesn't mean you can't play those other characters. But I will say it's important to know what you naturally walk into the room with. And shifting your actual vibration is a really high level acting technique that is really ultimately what people like, you know, Daniel Day-Lewis and Bradley Cooper and Matthew McConaughey and Meryl Streep and all those greats are doing. They're shifting their vibration so they're unrecognizable. But how do they walk into a room? Meryl Streep still has an energy to her when you see Meryl. Joaquin Phoenix still has an energy to him when you see him. They are able to shift to a different essence or vibration, but it is good for them to know what they walk into a room with. So let's talk about essence for a minute, because that goes a lot with branding. So your essence is not a character. It's an energy or vibration you walk into a room with. It exists before you speak. So most of the time when I am talking with filmmakers about how they see me, they're going to say strong. They're probably not going to say vulnerable. That is not to say I can't play vulnerable. I absolutely can, and I absolutely have, but it's easy for me to play strong. So if I have a strong character, then I have room to play. I know if the character's written strong, I can sit in who I naturally am, and I have room to play in that. If I'm playing a vulnerable character, I'm putting it on a little. Strength and vulnerability go hand in hand so very much. But if I have to play a very weak character or a character, I'm a very happy person, but I play a lot of dark characters. So I have to put that on a little bit. I have to tap. It's not even putting it on, it's tapping into it, because there's pieces and blocks of everything within all of us. So just know we have the capacity for everything, especially depending what happened. You know, you always see the apocalypse movies where someone's like the happy housewife and then the world ends. And then you see them like 3 years later and they're just like carrying a machine gun and fucking over it. Like that was in them always. Their life experience just didn't lead them to tap into that block within themselves. So it's really, what is your natural vibration and what do you have to work towards? And again, because when I walk into a room, I come across as strong. So if I want to play vulnerable, I need to do a little bit of work. If I want to come across as strong, I just need to walk into the room. So that for me is something that I know. Now, the reason I know that is because I did a course with a rest in peace, Sam Christensen, an incredible teacher who ran me through a essence class. They do still teach that class at Sam Christensen. It's expensive. It's very expensive, but I highly, highly recommend it. One of the exercises they do is have a friend ask 15 strangers to look at you without speaking to you and tell them 5 to 10 words that describe your energy or essence, not your physique. They also do have a list of character traits that I think you can just download from Sam Christensen. That is one of many exercises that they did. What I loved about, for instance, that course is the description that I ended up getting at the end of it was Elven Warrior with her feet on the table in the council meeting. So they give you like 5 of those. And it's funny because when I first heard that, I was like, I felt so seen. I felt like I literally cried when it happened, because I was just like, oh my God, that's so me. Like, and I had never really understood who I was. I had never really understood that I come across as, before I say a word, as sophisticated and elegant. I'm from Logan City, Queensland. Like we were rough, man. Like, sophisticated and elegant were not words that I thought would be in my wheelhouse of things that people would say before I said a word, before they saw my posture, just sitting neutral. What do people see when they look at you? So I think it's a really important exercise to maybe see if you can do. And yeah, a big thing a lot of actors have been doing for decades in Hollywood is go up to get a friend to go up to strangers and ask them to give a few words or circle a few words about what they see in you. It makes your acting a lot easier, and it also helps you so much with these marketing tools. So you can change it, obviously, but what you come across as naturally is just easy casting for you. And actually, I want to tell you a quick story. I went into audition for a film, which is one of my favorite films, called Eat, Brains, Love. I tend not to do horror films, but this script was so freaking funny. When I got the audition, I almost turned it down, and then I read the sides, and I have never laughed so much in audition sides. And then I read the script and my stomach was sore, my cheeks were sore for just laughing. I read the whole thing in like 75 minutes, and I do not read that fast because it was just hilarious. So anyway, I flew to Baton Rouge for the callback, and I usually, when I walk into an audition in the room, this is back in the days of auditions in the room, I walked in and I was reading for a military kind of lesbian. She was this really tough kind of character. And so anyway, I go in and I'm wearing black and jeans, but I'd been in such a rush to get to this callback. I only had 24 hours to get there. I'd booked a flight for like $850, flew into New Orleans, rented a car, drove to Baton Rouge, got there for the callback. And people whinge about self-tapes, man. Today's actors have no idea how lucky they are. So anyway, I get to the casting office. They'd had to hold it until I got there because I'd arrived so late that I got to there at the end after they'd finished the majority of the session. So anyway, I walk in, and instead of coming into the room what I usually would, which would be like, hey, how's it going? I'm Kim, here to read for whatever the fuck the character name was. But I instead walked in and was just like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. It's been a house out there. I was me. And I was, you know, it was sort of 6 years ago. And so I had that like kind of bouncy. I was really bouncy. And I was just like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Thank you so much for waiting for me. Blah, 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 blah. So anyway, I read for this tough character, and the director's just looking at me, and he's just like, how would you feel about reading for the hippie? And I was like, Oh my God, I would love to. That would be amazing. So I get the script. I go out to the car. I change into my literal baggy tie pants and singlet that I had in the car. I come back in. The director's like, oh my God, where did you get that costume? I'm like, that's what I wore here. That's what I wear on a daily basis. And, you know, the jewelry and all the stuff. And he's just like, oh my God. And I go, and I'm reading for summer. She's just like fun and bubbly and silly. And it was such a funny, example of your essence being what you walk into the room with is, or what they see you as is a vibrational thing. So if you're matching the vibration of your character, then you will be so much more likely to book it than someone that's just matching the look of the character. Essence is everything. People didn't often see that side of me. And because of my features, I would book this more harsh roles, but that walk into the room made them see my vibration in a completely different light. And I ended up booking that, that hippie character, which was the complete night and day opposite of the first character. She was the lesbian partner of the tough chick. So anyway, character. So as mentioned, you'll gain more auditions with 6 to 8 character photos. Here are some generic types that I would probably say take a screenshot of this one, just because these are the easy ones. There are going to be characters that are specific to you, but generally, if you can cover 6 to 8 that suit you and suit your age group out of these. Now, obviously, if you're younger, this is going to include student, college kid, maybe punk. I haven't included there. Maybe that would go into like low vibration. You could kind of do like a pump, although punk's not low vibration, it's rad, but emo or whatever. But main theatrical, white collar, blue collar responders. So that's fire police. They're best in just a blue or black t-shirt is usually really easy for them. For girls, hair pulled back for practicality reasons, usually not a huge amount of makeup. Medical, usually it'd be a white or a light blue. Parents, so you're dressing with a hint of, not in costume. Parents, so that's loving, sweet, and warm. Often it's the one where you're wearing a sweater or a jumper. Rural, plaid, just wear plaid for your rural photo. It's just easy. It's so cliche, but it makes it easy for people to be like, oh yes, she could work on a farm. Obviously she could. She's wearing plaid, when people on actual farms probably don't wear a lot of plaid. Wealthy, so that's evening wear. For women, that's your hair done, makeup done, earrings. For men, that's either a tux or a very, very nice suit and tie. Villains, now that's a look. Villains is a look. Wardrobe wise, it could be just about anything. It's energy. Now, low vibrations, so you go your junkies, your thugs. Also homeless people. Not that homeless people are low vibration, but there is a vibration to being out of money, out of luck on the streets. And I know some people are on the streets by choice and they love it. It's rad. It's a very exciting lifestyle and they save money and they have jobs, but probably still fits in the low vibration category. Just because they're probably disheveled. They're probably not dressed that well. I just was on a film and they were looking for a homeless man. And I had a friend who just suited that. He's not homeless. He has a very nice house up the coast. But he just suited that look and he ended up booking the part and did an amazing job and everyone loved him. It would be good for him to have a homeless person headshot because he's very easy casting as a homeless person. Hippies / earthy. So that's like more like your flower power. That like earthy tones and maybe like a beaded necklace or, you know what I mean? Hippies. You know what a hippie looks like. So a headshot. Now I want to go into how to take great headshots because there's a real art to this. A headshot should be a moment in the life of that character, not just the best photo in each outfit. So this is so important. I think it's very easy to go, oh, well, I'll just take a bunch of photos in different outfits and I'll use the one where I look the prettiest. That's not really what we are going for with this. So, oh, here we go. Okay, so let's just take another look at these photos. When I was taking this photo in the top right, I was thinking, get off my porch. I was picturing myself as a character, staring someone down, telling them what, it literally was, what the F are you doing at my house? What the F are you doing here? And I'm in the scene, in a moment, as that character, I can still picture the house. I can still picture that I had my gun behind the door. That was a moment in a character. And I did that in a headshot shoot. This attorney was just, I've got you. You can trust me. You know, come this way. We'll take care of your case. The rural on the bottom was literally, I'd just done a hard day's work and I was just looking out on the farm. I was happy, having a beer, all was well. Now this one here in the bottom right, this was my main, you know, intended to be kind of a main theatrical. So it was just me. I wasn't in a character for that photo. And it kind of shows, you know, like it's just me. It's just a photo of a person. So I definitely recommend, you know, as you do your headshot shoots, going through and choosing characters and having a story for each of those characters. So let's take a quick look at the types within characters. So, which type of character are you most suited to? So you might want to say, okay, I'll take my white collar photo. Great. If you're taking a white collar photo, are you more likely and are you more naturally comfortable? Does your vocal pattern or way of speaking or energy match better as a high-priced lawyer, a low-priced lawyer, underpaid, tired, high-priced lawyer, ruthless, confident? A lawyer who's quirky, peppy, frazzled, like just kind of one of those fun lawyers, friendly, warm, open. So just like a nice, kind, you know, middle of the road priced suit, lovely lawyer, a slimy, leery, creepy lawyer. Maybe that's something that suits you a little better. No offense. Bright, vibrant, and kind. So, you know, what are the, actually that's exactly the same as friendly, warm, and open. So, you know, just patch all those in together. So, when you are going to take your white collar photo, you want to make sure within that you choose one that suits what you feel you will most likely be able to book as an actor. Now, anyone can be a lawyer. The question is, what kind of lawyer are you? So for every character type that you would like to take, have a think about that. When you're playing low vibration, are you going to be the homeless guy? Are you going to be the thug? Are you going to be the junkie? What are you more likely to book? And what do you think would be more fun? Build your character. Now, this is what we were just talking about. I thought this was the next section, which is why I skipped ahead. So who are you? What are you thinking? What just happened? What's happening now? So you're going to build a scene around each of your characters for your headshot shoot. Why did you come here? Who are you looking at? Who is the camera? You need to know who the camera is. So when you're looking at them, you know what you're saying to them inside your head. Have a moment with them. How do you feel? And you need to tell your headshot photographer you're going to be doing this stuff so they're not trying to direct you to look pretty, because especially a less experienced headshot photographer, that's what they're going to be doing. And then I recommend doing a headshot test shoot. So just get a friend, choose your outfits for the shoot and do a test photo, preferably on an overcast day or in the shade on a sunny day. So you have a lot of light, but no direct sunlight and no, you know, downlighting coming in. You know, you're not in the room. Like for instance, right now it's overcast. I'm in the house. So I'm using like, Andrew took my lighting kit. So I'm using like a lamp and the ceiling light. So my lighting is making me a little orange. Take these photos. If I was taking headshot shoots, I would step out onto the balcony right there. I'd probably actually, because it's overcast, I'd just go into the backyard. If it's a sunny day, do it on the balcony, you know, and have these photos so you can practice, you can have a look at the outfit, figure out what kind of background might match it, and also practice the energy and vibration of each character. Now, as you're doing each character, it doesn't mean you have to just have that one moment or that one look. You go through a whole scene, you could go through a whole things. But when this, for instance, this character that I've got up on the screen right now, when she smiles, she's smiling in a snide way. She's smiling with a sneer. So how she smiles is going to be very different to how my hippie girl character would smile. So that's what I think is something important that I think for you guys to kind of focus on as well is don't be limited by the type of character you've decided to be. You can still do different facial expressions in that character, but most likely you're going to probably use the one that most embodies the moment that you chose for that character. But take smiles and other facial expressions as options. So you have them in your bag of tricks, in your headshot library. So wardrobe, dress with the essence, we've talked about all this, dress with the essence of the character, no uniforms or costumes, and only think about the top. Obviously, they're not going to see your pants. The pants can be helpful to make you feel like the character, especially if you're doing something sexy. I would definitely recommend if you're a woman and you identify as a woman and you feel comfortable in heels, put some heels on, put some sexy lingerie on, whatever it helps make you feel like you are that character. And for men, whatever makes you feel sexy, or people who identify as men, maybe you want to do push-ups, maybe what identifies you as a man is something completely different to what I would imagine, do that. Whatever makes you feel sexy, get to that. Use whatever techniques you need to get to that. And to be honest, pants on a character in a headshot shoot is part of that. Or a bottom half skirt, whatever it is, that helps you with the character. So headshot background. So let's just talk about the background. Backgrounds should be out of focus. I sometimes see headshots where people have taken a headshot with a really low budget photographer. They've just gotten a friend to take a photo. You don't want, that's distracting. That should be blurry. You know, in the back, whatever's in the background should be blurry. Otherwise it's distracting from the person's face. So your background should be out of focus. It should complement the tonal and color palette of the character where possible. If a headshot photographer, and if you go to their website and they're keeping the backdrop in focus, don't shoot with them. You don't want to be dealing with that. You don't want to have to teach someone how to do their job. It's just, don't work with them. They're not the person to take good headshots of you. So if you do have an iPhone, a new one, you know, just have a look. Portrait mode blurs the background. That's how a headshot should look. It brings focus to the subject. A normal photo is not going to do the same thing. A headshot photographer should be doing it with a depth of field that makes the background not prominent and not distracting. So you also want to use a tonal match. So see this photo compared with this photo. So this photo, I've got like silvers and bright whites and stuff to complement it. Now this photo, I've got, this is more of a sci-fi, you know, post-apocalyptic kind of chick. So she's got metal. He pulled out metal in the background, or a sheet that looks like metal in the background, and dark gunmetal gray. That matches the vibe of the character. It doesn't have to in every photo. Sometimes a juxtaposition or a dichotomy within the photo can be nice, but I think it's a good idea to generally have a backdrop that matches the tone of the character that you've chosen to shoot. And again, as mentioned, the background needs to be out of focus. I think it's really, really important. If that background back there was in focus, it would be very distracting. So what else do we have in background? Eyes. Okay, focus. So zoom in to make sure that your eye is in focus. This is a little bit blurry. So, you know, that's important to know, because you want your eye to be perfectly in focus so that people feel more connected to the photo. So zoom in on the eye up to 100%, not getting bigger than 100%, and make sure that it's in focus. So casting wants real people, not pretend people. So when you're doing, this is headshot touch-ups, Photoshop, etc. Casting wants real people. They don't want pretend people. So just look like your photo. Don't editing photos to make you look 10 years younger is just going to waste everybody's time. If they think you're 30 and you're 40, they're going to be watching your audition going, why is this person auditioning? It doesn't make any sense. And they're going to look back at the photo and go, they don't look like their photo. That's helpful. Thanks. You've wasted their time. You probably haven't been called in for a lot of roles that you were perfect for. And you have been called in for these roles that are 10 years younger than you, and you're just not going to book them. So just look your age, look your type. Don't be afraid to have imperfections, because that is what makes us human. Human beings are on TV. If you look on TV, yes, absolutely. And in film, absolutely. Movie stars doll themselves up at awards shows. They doll themselves up for editorial shoots. But in film and TV on camera today, people don't always look pretty. I just did a job and the makeup department called me and said, what are you thinking for the role? Let's chat. And I said, how would you feel about not touching my face with a makeup brush for the entire shoot? And they said, we love it. They said, we'll run it by the director, but we love it. They said, it'll save us a bunch of time in the chair. That sounds great. they want real people on camera because that's how people connect, especially in the days of AI and everything's fake and there's something beautiful about being human. And especially today, where there's so much fake stuff out there, it's so important for people on screen to look like human beings. And, you know, Pamela Anderson's walking around everywhere these days with no makeup on. And how much attention is she actually getting? Way more than she was for the 10 years prior, where she was wearing makeup everywhere and nobody really cared because she just looked like everyone else. So don't be afraid to look like you. Remove blemishes. So if you've got a zit, the zit's not going to be there when you do your audition next month. So yes, remove the zit. Remove blemishes, anything that's not going to be there. Stray hairs, the hair is not going to be there in a month. But wrinkles, maybe opt to gently soften them or smooth them, but don't remove them. Those wrinkles are part of who you are and they're important. Bring up your eye color. That's fine. Make your eyes pop. Make the color pop. Definitely have color correction done on the photo so it looks great. And whiten the whites of your eyes. You know, if you want to make the photo more vibrant, absolutely do it. Whatever makes it stand out. But that doesn't mean you have to take, take parts of who you are and what you look like away from you. Also, highly recommend learning to use Photoshop because it'll save you a fortune. Headshot cropping, 8x10 format still applies. It tends to get to like more of a square on the casting websites, but we still use 8x10 for most headshots. Face should be 40 to 75% of the image. I'll go into that in a minute. Any closer than that can distort the viewer's perception farther away and your head looks tiny in submissions. Learn to use grid lines and you don't want any room above your head. Now let's have a look at that in more detail. So this is a very wide crop, obviously. It's a great photo, still looks good. These grid lines show you, it's great, but the focus of the image ends up being kind of here in the middle part of the grid. So what you really want is you want your eyes to be kind of on this line of interest, or at least somewhat near it. So really, to be honest, I should probably recrop this where the line goes right between his eyes right there. The focus should be, so you want most of your face to be as close as you can have to this little box and on these lines of where the attention kind of goes. So you can't really see the difference when it's like this, when it's big and when it's, sort of the same size. But because this photo on the left looks perfectly nice, whatever, what's the problem? But when you go, there's room above his head, we've cut that out. All of this space down here, we've cut out. Doesn't seem to matter when it's big, but then when you look at it and they're the same size, he on the right-hand side looks a lot more prominent than he does on the left-hand side when you're looking at it. Now, again, you'd go, okay, well, both of these photos are still pretty good. I kind of like seeing a little bit of his body type. Who cares? But then when it's being submitted to casting, this is what you get. And this is where it starts to matter. So this is why we say at least your head should be at least 45% of the size of the photo. So his head's about 55% of the size of the photo. You could probably even punch in a little bit further if you wanted to. But this is the difference. So this space at the top here, same with self-tapes, this space at the top here is wasted space. You don't need it. This space on the side and at the bottom that's all been cropped, you don't need it. So then here on the right-hand side, we get a really easily identifiable actor that you feel more connected with than the actor on the left. And that is why cropping matters. So I think we might be done with headshots. Oh my gosh. Okay, cool. Demo reel. Let's get into it. So, let's talk about what we've done so far. So we've gone through resume, we've gone through headshots. We are about to do demo reel and cover that a little bit. And then marketing online. So we'll talk through that and exchanging info. So that's just when you meet people, kind of how to interact. But most of what we're going to talk about coming up is your demo reel and marketing online, which will include, you know, IMDb websites and those casting websites. So demo reel should be under 2 minutes until you have recognizable TV credits. Guys, I'm serious about that. Please don't make a demo that's over 2 minutes long. It can be fun if you do, most scenes should be 5 to 40 seconds long, but It can be a fun idea, and 40 seconds is long for a demo scene. It can be a fun idea to add a little 5-second scene to open your demo up as your title card comes up. So you don't want to have a title card. You don't want to waste the first 5 seconds or 3 seconds of your demo with a title card that has nothing else on the screen. People's attention spans are so short. You want to get straight to acting. So if there's a 5-second scene where maybe you start the scene, and for the first 2 seconds, there's nothing, you know, it's just the scene. Then that next 3 seconds, your name comes up as a little title card over the top of that scene. Then you've got a little 5-second scene. It gives you an option and the ability to use like a little clip that maybe you might not have been able to use anywhere else, especially if it's funny or it's something profound, or if your character's saying something like, wait till you see this or something like that. It's fun. It's, you know, we're in show business. People want it to be fun a little bit. So your best acting scene, other than that 5-second scene, your best acting scene should always be first, always, without question, without paying attention to anything else. The best acting should always be first because people want to see your reel to see if you can act. That is their primary focus and intention when they're looking at your reel. Can you act? Are you right for what I'm currently casting? As you go from scene to scene, just a little strategy. If you pre-lap sound from the next scene, so say, for instance, you've got it where your character is responding to a question from another character and you want to start the scene there, you can include the other character's question. But you don't really want to start any of your scenes on the other character. So if you have the audio from that next scene of the other character asking you a question, and then when the scene cuts to your face, the visual cuts to the visual of that scene, then the question from the other character, the audio of that is playing over the end of the previous scene. And then the visual starts on the new scene when the camera is on you. This only works if the previous scene has maybe a little bit of silence, a little bit of tension, or a little moment at the end where you can have a pre-lap of audio, but it's something to make a note of and maybe ask your demo reel editor to show you an example of it, because it is quite hard for me to explain without showing you an example. If you want to go to my IMDb, my editor's a genius. He's at LA Media Reels. He's super expensive though. If you don't have a big, if you don't have a lot of footage, don't spend the money until you've worked more. But you will see pre-lapse. Oh, you can even go to his website, LA Media Works. Or it's just on my IMDb, KYM Jackson. You'll see under the demo reel, you can see, and almost every scene has a pre-lap. And they also often have music that ties 2 or 3 scenes in together, which is why it can be good to gather your footage without soundtrack attached. But that's all covered. We actually have a massive demo reel course that is a 2-hour course on building your demo reel properly. So these are just kind of highlights today. So selecting your scenes. Selecting scenes can feel overwhelming. So let's just go through scene assessment. So this is a little grid that for any Secret Actors Society members, you can grab it in the members section. So Criminal Minds, for instance, a very old scene of mine. This is how I track all of my demo reel scenes. So Criminal Minds, I'm comforting the police. My character type is rural, low income, pretty much exactly that photo that I showed you guys with me in the ponytail and the plaid shirt. You know, me taking that headshot came from me booking this character, not the other way around. Genre, drama, looks like me. So this is where you go through and you just give a little rating for each of these. Does it look like you? How's my acting? Is there a recognizable actor in the project? Are there others? How's the other actors acting? So does your reader suck? If the other actor sucks, you may not be able to use it. I'm really sorry. Is it 1080p? So if you don't have footage in 1080p, if you've got something really old and you have it in low res or not HD, you may not want to use it. You may not be able to use it if everything else is 1080p because it's not going to look very good. Camera work and editing, that's very important. But not a deciding factor. Again, it's helpful, but not a deciding factor. How much time are you on camera in the scene? I think that's good. And that way you can just scene length. And that can just be the number of seconds of the scene that you want to use, script quality and overall score. So this is where if you kind of just grid all of these factors out, then you can kind of just track all of your scenes and figure out what to use in or not use in your reel. It just kind of allows you to organize everything really easily. So the main things to look at are if it still looks like you, obviously, The quality of your acting is your top priority. But if it doesn't still look like you, it doesn't really matter because the quality of your acting, you know, it doesn't matter because it doesn't look like you. So who is that? That's another person. That's you from 15 years ago. Production quality, they're really the main top things. Obviously, the other items being strong are extremely helpful. So the perfect acting reel. So the reason I have this here is I don't want you to feel like you have to have stuff from produced projects. So if you don't have footage from produced projects that reflects the characters you want to play or reflects who you want to be as an actor, it's okay to create your own footage.
Let me just show you.
Your dream roles, footage from produced projects, what matches your look and essence. Now, if there is footage from a produced project that matches your look and essence, that is your bread and butter. That's what's easy bookings for you. So you definitely want to include that on your reel. Now, if you have something that you would love to play, a character you would love to play, if you have already done a project that is that character, oh my gosh, that's magic. Definitely add it to your reel. If you have a character you would love to play, your dream role, it matches your look and your essence, then here, you can write and film that scene. Now, you can either do it as a self-tape or you can do it as a recorded scene where you pay someone or you get friends who have amazing cameras to film it as a scene, or you just write a short film around it. You're not limited by what you've been hired to do as an actor, especially these days. Just put, you know, write a short film, produce a short film of that character, or write a scene, make a scene of that character. It's these days in the digital age, everything is so much easier. Do a little crowdfunding thing, raise $5,000, shoot a short film. Who cares? Get the footage. So obviously, if something is all three, it's a dream role, it's from a produced project, and it matches your look and essence, absolutely add it to your reel. Anything in these little inside bubbles, absolutely add to your reel if you can. Now, if footage from produced projects matches your look and essence, but it's not your dream role, probably still add it to your reel because that's your bread and butter. So that's what I love about that Venn diagram. It is my favorite Venn diagram on earth. I love Venn diagrams and it's the first one I've ever built. So I'm really proud of it. So I've added it again to the next page. So what are you selling? So basically, let's just run through really quickly what you are selling. So we went through this branding. This is your easy casting. These are your essence roles. They feel easy. They fit. They highlight your strengths. You get called in for them and book them all the time. Your friend says you're perfect for this. When you're reading the audition, they're like, oh my God, you're going to book this. They match your vibration, not your occupation, your vibration. This is all that essence stuff that we already ran through. If you had gone into their profession, you would basically be them. So I do want to remind you, if you worked in the mines as a FIFO worker, you would still be you as a FIFO worker. You might be a little less inspired in your career because maybe you wouldn't feel like you were pursuing your dreams because it's hard to be an actor if you're a FIFO worker, but you would still be you. If you're the funny guy in the office, you're probably still going to be the funny guy as a surf instructor or working in the mines or as a homeless person. You're still probably going to be that person. So this is where essence kind of your easy stuff comes into it. So never feel restricted by occupation. Focus on your easy casting being your vibration. You can be almost anyone. You're not limited to your natural essence. Obviously, we can shift our vibration. In live action without CGI, you are limited by your physical appearance to an extent, but you can alter many elements. You know, there's some things that are harder to mimic. If a really smart person can mimic a dumb person, but a low IQ person may have trouble mimicking a high IQ person to the complex dialogue, speed of talking. And the funny thing is, it's the Hollywood perception of that because there's plenty of high IQ people who can't speak fast and can't say complex dialogue. It's fish and trees, right? They can do other things that utilize their high intelligence. But what comes across on screen is how, you know, intelligence is defined on screen by speaking fast and being able to use complex dialogue and all of these other little things. So it can be hard to mimic something if it's out of your kind of capabilities. If you can't speak really quickly with complex dialogue, it may be something that's just a little tricky and you may not be able to book those roles. But other than that, you can do anything. So to change your essence, I'm just coming over to the right-hand side. Our essence is based on vibration. Characters also have a vibration. If you want to change your essence, so this is obviously acting strategy, but if you want to change your essence, alter your thoughts through character preparation. Alter your vibration. Vibration changes with music very easily. If you go to a death metal concert versus a Taylor Swift concert, you are going to walk out of there with two really different feelings in you. And it's the same if you put on headphones and listen to some music. You're going to shift your vibration. Physicality, the way your voice is, for instance, 5 days ago when my voice wasn't working at all, I felt quite weak. I didn't feel as strong. And it made me realize, hey, a lot of my impression of myself where I think I'm so strong, because I lose arm wrestles all the time. I'm actually not very strong, but where I think I'm such a strong person comes from the fact that I have this really loud, booming, strong voice that can reach the other side of a concert hall. So posture. For characters in the past, I remember I had a character with a limp and I just put a beaded necklace that I got from Bourbon Street in my boot every time I played the character. And then it hurt my foot to stand on that foot. So I ended up with a limp. That way I didn't have to put on a limp. The limp was just there because I couldn't put any pressure on that pointy beaded necklace. The way you walk, movements, posture is definitely a big one. So, leaning over, feeling small can be, all of those things impact your vibration. And also meditate. If you want to get really high vibration, meditate or surf or whatever meditation is for you. The masters often choose roles with an essence that is different than what they've previously played. So, I certainly don't consider myself a master, but I do remember this one time where I booked 3 housewife roles in a row. I was the Australian housewife. I was in a film in Sydney, a film in Tasmania, playing the Australian housewife. Then I went to Africa in Cape Town and I played the Australian housewife. And then I went to Sydney and I played the Australian housewife in 3 films in a row. And now I never book. First of all, I never book Australians, let alone the Australian housewife. So for me, it was really fun at the start. And then by the end of it, I was like, man, this is like walk and talk stuff. It's not even tricky. I was like, this is really boring to me. And so I personally, because I'm a character actor, I don't particularly enjoy just playing walk and talk roles. They're bread and butter, obviously, but it can be good for you to branch out to roles where the essence is just completely separate and super far removed from who you are naturally, because it's so much more fun. Or for me anyway, it might not be for you, but so your dream roles. Now your reel's always going to have footage that you already have, but find a character you absolutely love that you'd like to show casting that you can do. Self-tape the role. Don't feel like you can't self-tape things that you want to play. Have it as a separate character clip. If your reel is just made out of self-tapes, you can put it on your reel. If your reel is all produced footage, then maybe you can add it as a self-tape. If you like, you might prefer to shoot it as a produced scene just so that it matches the rest of the footage on your reel and kind of sit in there a little more cohesively. Over time, keep a list of your dream roles. As you're watching film and TV, write down the characters you love. As you imagine yourself in huge movies, what are the characters you'd most like to play? What do we have in the resources? I keep adding these. List of demo reel editors. Oh, that's actually quite handy. Okay, cool. So demo reel editors and production companies are in the secretactorsociety.com/journey2-reels. Now that's for anyone can access that. That's not just for members. That's for anyone who's doing this course. So you guys can go there now and check it out if you're interested in seeing a list of demo reel editors. So scene selection, we already talked through scene selection, but just to finalize, gather a group of reel-worthy scenes, use the technical assessment. Acting is your top priority. Short moments, grab any short moments or one-liners. They might come in handy if you do like a little montage or something. I know people don't love montages, but I don't care. I have a montage, whatever, too bad for them. I just don't put the montage at the start of your reel. And if you are going to do a montage, make sure there's speaking in each of those moments. If you do have to put a montage that shows different looks and stuff, and you really are compelled to do it, put it at the end so people can just stop the video. For every scene, ask, or they can watch your montage. That'd be rad. Because montages really bug casting people for some casting people for some reason. I love them. I feel like it feels like you're watching a movie trailer. So for every scene, ask, is this showing something new or do I have a better version of this? And that is for character type, type of moment, location. So for character type, do you have another white collar, high profile office worker, or do you have another strong female or strong character that you really want to play? Type of moment. So crying, yelling, romantic. Location. So courtroom, interrogation, bartending. Could this go on a different reel? So this is a valid question. Maybe it's a comedy scene and you go, oh, hey, I've actually got enough footage to do a separate comedy reel. Or maybe there's a reel you want to add for a specific character. We talk about that a little later. But am I excited to play this character? Is it a dream role of mine? So that's how you kind of make those decisions. Guys, don't try to fill your reel up. This is definitely quality over quantity, okay? Do not try to fill your reel up with footage just to show that you've worked a bunch. No one cares. They can see that in your resume. When you are doing a reel, only show your best acting. You do not want to give people an opportunity to go, oh, actually, no, I've seen enough. I don't need to see the audition for my film. Other reels and clips. So there are a bunch of other types of reels, acting reels. You've got your main theatrical reel, which is also called a demo reel, a reel or a show reel, comedy reel, dramatic reel, character reels, individual scenes, and a commercial reel. You do not have to do all of these. I only have one. I have a main theatrical acting reel. That's it. But if you have others, I am about to split it into drama and comedy. And I do have some individual scenes. So I guess I do have quite a few of those. Other on-camera reels, stunt reel, fighting reel, reels for special skills, dance, sports, musical instruments, stand-up, theater. So special skills reels are really important. I had a casting director reach out last year saying, hey, does Kim have an action reel? I had to write back and say no, which is really frustrating because I want to work in action movies. So that's on me. I haven't filmed an action reel. I haven't filmed a fighting reel. I haven't even gone into a dojo and just done some moves to get some stuff on camera. Now, I know how to sword fight. I can knife fight. I've done jiu-jitsu. I don't have footage of any of that stuff. So that's on me. And that's a really big gap in my skill set and my ability to share and show my skill set. And I probably missed out on a job over it. So that's something to really focus on. Now, also voice reels, audiobook commercials, animation, dubbing, and singing. Label everything clearly so everyone can know exactly what they want to, they can find exactly what they need to see. The genre, the character type, and the project name. Now, if you have all of this on a website, just know people are probably only going to watch one thing. So put your main reel very clearly at the top, not with any other junk. Don't send people to a page that has 10 videos on it. Drives people crazy. At least it drives me crazy. Just send them to a page with one reel. Don't put old stuff up. Don't feel like you have to keep old short films on your website just because they exist. If you want them there, bury them. Hide them in a page of previous work or whatever. But don't send people that you want to work with now to a page that has old work on it. There's just no reason to show that stuff. So character clips, 1 minute or less, specific to a type of character. They should be named as the character type rather than the character name, and they can be from more than one project. So here's just a little example on my Actors Access. Detective scene. That's from Devil's Dolls. I've got a few different scenes in this character. Police officer I've got from Devil's Dolls. Now she's a detective, but she also goes in and does like SWAT kind of work with the vest. So I separated it just to show the two different types. So I think it's important to give people. So if you were casting a detective, you're not going to click on the white trash. You're not going to click on the police officer. And you're certainly not going to click on my main reel when there's a thing that says detective scene. So I think it's really helpful for people who are casting to save them time. This is a 2-hour course that is in the Secret Actor Society video vault. It's also available for sale on the website, but goes through building an entire demo reel. Definitely recommend checking it out. If you're one of our members, check it out on there. If you're not and you'd like to grab it, I'll do like an MEAA discount at the end of this. But yeah, you can watch it on our 7-day free trial even. You can just sign up for the 7-day free trial and then watch the class and then leave if you like. Plenty of people do. It's not a big deal. But to be honest, most people stay. So anyway, that's at Secret Action Society. I'll leave this up because why not? It's all very exciting. So that is our section on demo reels. Let's move on. So marketing materials that get you auditions. We have gone through resume. We've gone through headshots. We've gone through demo. We're going to go now into marketing online and then exchanging info, which is a very small section. Marketing online will take about 10 minutes and then exchanging info will probably take about 5 minutes, I think. So IMDb Pro, note this discount code. You get 30% off IMDb Pro with the code SAG, S-A-G discount. If you have IMDb Pro, you can go in and enter that code and then it will apply whether you're on a monthly or an annual, it'll still apply. It's usually for SAG members only, but whatever. IMDb is too expensive. So when you go in, IMDb photos and video, your main IMDb photo options. So I think it looks really good. Just don't even bother listening to me. Just go to most of the celebrities, see what they have as their main IMDb photo. It's very rarely a headshot. It's usually a photo of them at a red carpet, an editorial photo, or a main theatrical shot that looks really, really good. But usually it's the red carpet or the editorial photo. Very occasionally it's a production still, but usually it's not. Add one or two production stills to round out your page on IMDb. If you add them to the project and then tag yourself, they should show up on your page. If they don't, then just add them to your page and tag the project. When you do a red carpet of note, add one photo, just because why not? It looks good. People are clicking through your IMDb. Keep in mind, the things that impress independent filmmakers aren't going to impress studios and networks. So they're two completely different conversations. Is a network TV show more likely to hire you because you have red carpet photos on IMDb or production stills on IMDb? Probably not. Is an independent filmmaker more likely to? Well, maybe, yeah. If they're comparing you with an actor that doesn't have IMDb, doesn't have a social media profile, and you know, you've got all this stuff looking great, then for them, you're going to look like an actor that's got more of a public-facing image and who's a bit more prominent. So yeah, it looks a little bit more exciting. So as an independent filmmaker, they're going to go, oh, cool. Yeah, she's out and about. She's in the community. She's in the tribe. Great. So add a red carpet photo, add a few production stills, just if you have them. So demo on your IMDb, only add one demo unless you have comedy and drama, because you want to keep it really succinct when you're talking about something that the public is looking at. All those other demos are for casting directors. They're for your agent and manager. They're for filmmakers maybe, but you want it for the public. You want it to just be simple. One demo or two, comedy and drama. Delete all your old demos. Don't add character clips on IMDb. Again, that is the behind the scenes stuff that the public does not need to see. IMDb resume. So if you don't have any credits on IMDb, there's no reason not to just add an IMDb resume. So set up a vanity URL, IMDb.me/your name. That way you can claim it for later and it looks better in your emails. It's just easier to write. Add searchable items like place of birth, languages, age range. Just build out your IMDb. Never add your birth date. You will regret it. I added mine. I regret it. Even though I play my age, I still regret it. Imagine if I was someone who played younger. Upload all photos mentioned in the photo section and your demo reel. So did you know you can search for groups of people on IMDb by age, sex, star meter, ethnicity, etc.? So you become very searchable when you have an IMDb profile, and people often use it to cast projects. So the star meter on IMDb, there is a ranking system that shows how quote unquote famous a person is. It changes every week and it changes dramatically every week. So here's an example. This is, you know, to be honest, it's probably mine. I don't know whose it is, but it's, you know, in the space of 1 year, it went from 80,000 to 40,000 to 200,000 to 40,000 to 20,000 to 15,000. So don't feel like an IMDb star meter is going to be the thing that defines you as an actor. The star meter does matter to an extent. So if you are on the few occasions that I've been higher than 5,000, which would be a lower number than 5,000, I've started to get offers coming through from my agents, and it's happened every time, essentially. And then when my star meter bounces back above 5,000 to like the teens, or the 20s, the offers go away. So for low budget independent filmmakers, it's something that people look at. And to be honest, when casting directors are making lists, when networks and studios are making lists, you know, maybe not networks and studios because they have a separate thing called studio system, but when casting directors and independent filmmakers are making lists of actors to reach out to, they will look at Star Meter and they will look at people in that top 10, five or 10,000 for projects. Other than that, it doesn't matter. Nobody cares. You know, if you're under 100,000, you're probably working lately. If you're over 100, you know, if you're better than 100,000, if you're lower number than 100,000, you've probably been working lately. If you're a higher number than 100,000, so if you're lower than 100,000, then you probably haven't been working lately in anything prominent. That's all it comes down to. No one really cares. If you do want to work on your Star Meter, because again, I say no one really cares. I was getting offers when I had a better Star Meter. The ways to increase it are just really simple long-term stuff. Obviously work more as an actor and promote your projects when they come out. Karmelicity is a thing that's specifically designed for increasing Star Meters. I don't know if I think it works with the new algorithm. Add your IMDb link to your email signature. Why not? People will click on it here and there. Add your IMDb link prominently in all your social media, websites. And also if you ever do an interview somewhere when you're promoting your projects, in this first bullet point, when you're promoting your projects, make sure they include your IMDb link in those articles about you. That way people, when they're clicking, they'll kind of add to the movement that's going on your IMDb page. But ultimately, guys, don't think about or worry about the Star Meter. It is a weird vanity thing. I have actually honestly haven't, I think I looked at mine this morning, but before that I hadn't looked at it in probably 3 or 4 months. People just don't care. There's also a section on IMDb, which all confession, I have not filled out for myself. However, people really like it when your IMDb biography is filled out. So go in, fill that out. People want to hear about you. They want your origin story. It can be a few paragraphs long. Don't make it super long, probably keep it under 1,000 words, but you know, add a few highlights. You don't need to write your resume though. They want to hear your backstory, where you grew up, what led you to become an actor and why you want to act. And that's something that'll be helpful when anyone's looking at you, not just filmmakers to potentially hire you. Oh, there's so much more. Okay, online casting sites. So complete all the sections of your profile, guys. Don't sign up for a casting website and half fill it out. Pay to add the additional marketing materials. There's no reason not to. Always put a personal note in any of your submissions. So this is something I really want to highlight. Every time I do a submission, and I still do, I don't always have time, but I still do. I just, like I said, I did 4 auditions yesterday. I did 3 or 4 auditions last week. I'm very busy. I still got the Daisy Ridley job. My agent submitted me, but I still got that Daisy Ridley job I just did from picking up the phone and calling the casting director. Not even the Sydney casting director, I called the local hire casting director on location, Megan, who's amazing. I didn't know her though. I found her phone number on a website. And look, I don't recommend going around calling all these casting directors, but if a role is just perfect for you, follow up with an email. Follow up if you are connected on socials. You know, if you're Facebook friends with a casting director, shoot them a message. Who cares? As long as you're respectful, people aren't going to hold it against you. The best way to do it is always to ask your agent, always to go through your agent. But if the audition's not coming in, the only reason I picked that phone up was because the role was a re-release. I was like, well, then why didn't I go in for that first time? So I called casting, pitched myself, got the audition and booked the job, but it was a re-release. I also put it through to my agent and said, hey, can you submit me for this? They wrote back and said, we already have. I was like, great. But just something in me made me want to do some step further. And because it was on a public casting platform, I felt comfortable doing that. And now I booked this massive, awesome job. So it does make a difference when you do something personal. Always put a personal note in any submission on a casting website. So whatever it is, even if it's just, thanks for taking a look at my stuff, use the casting director's name, something personalized. I promise it has an impact. It's respectful. Follow up with an email. If you think the role is really right for you, send your headshot, resume and relevant links. You should have an email footer in all of your emails. Actually, that should be a section in this seminar. Funnily enough, it's not. So email footer in all of your emails, guys, is very, very important marketing tool. preferably with a photo in it and some links to your relevant websites. So that should be something that's just attached to every email that goes out from you, no matter who it's going to, as long as it's not for your day job, obviously. Instagram is the main form of social media used as a real gauge of an actor's fan base. Everyone's building up these massive followings on TikTok, and it's incredible and it's so important. I will say people still kind of, you know, the oldies, you know, most of the people who are casting, most of the filmmakers, we're all still on Instagram. So secure your Instagram name now, even if you don't want a profile. Select three branding points. So I think mine is like entertainment, adventure, and something else, but entertainment, adventure, and whatever, something. But everything I do is under those three branding points. Now, I got that from my friend Ryan, who runs an incredible social media company called TSMA. So if you have lots of money, that TSMA will run your socials for you. They'll teach you how to do your branding points. They'll teach you how to set up your social media following. And it will be a great investment. You just have to have the money. It's expensive, but it's worth it. So it's just one of those things where if you are very financially secure, take a look at TSMA. I think it stands for the Social Media Advantage. I love them. Tell them I sent you. I don't get a kickback, but I should. I don't think I should ask them that. But so three branding points on your profile, and then everything should align with that. So don't look at people going, oh, well, that person's posting food photos, that person's posting travel photos, I should be doing that. That's not the case. Figure out what you represent and what you stand for, and then make sure everything follows on from that. Post twice a week for the algorithm. So if you want to stay prominent in the algorithm, post twice a week. My way of doing that is I just share stories because I don't have time to post on Instagram all the time. So I just, when I see something cool, I share it as a story so Instagram thinks I'm alive. Get help from an Instagram organic growth company that grows through interaction and does not buy likes or followers. Funnily enough, TSMA also does that. And that's a bit more of an affordable package, but it is still, I think, a few hundred bucks a month. I'm not sure. So website, you do not need a website. Buy your domain name. So I have Kim Jackson, kymjackson.com. It redirects to my IMDb profile. Then I have, you know, an email address to kimjackson.com, which looks kind of cool on a business card. If you already have a website, don't worry. It's awesome. It's great that you have a website. You can use it for a lot of things. You can put your demo reel on the homepage. Like I said, only two demo reels maximum, either your main demo or a comedy and drama demo, unless you have some special skill that is just off the charts and you have to show it there. Have a headshots page, 10 maximum, all varied. Put up production stills, put links to where people can buy or watch your films online, or anything that you've done online, so that people can maybe go through your resume and click on stuff to see it. Or clips from gigs. So if you want to list down some of your gigs, put a production still from that gig, and when they click, they can watch a clip from it. Great. And then press. So the best thing for a website is really good for is to collect all of your press in one place. And I think that's really important. And also you can do a blog with updates, and then people can know what you've been doing and sort of feel a bit more connected with you. And also obviously contact information. And if you do have an email list, add a place where people can sign up for your email list. So our final section should be very, very quick, exchanging info. So I was just at Screen Forever, as mentioned. I met a lot of people and they're all, the funniest conversations I had were, oh, hey, I'm blah, blah, blah. Oh, hey, I'm blah, blah, blah. Oh, cool. What do you do? Oh, I'm an actor. Oh, hey, I'm a filmmaker. Oh, cool. What kind of stuff do you do? Oh, well, I directed this show for the past two seasons. And me going, I auditioned for you. You didn't hire me. And them going, no way. It happened to me several times. So conferences, and we'll talk about that in a moment, are one of the best places to meet people in the industry. And there are a lot of people, a lot of creatives there wanting to meet producers. And you know, it's a producers conference, but there were plenty of directors there. So everyone's friendly. So film festivals and conferences and film markets are the best place to meet filmmakers and people who can hire you. So exchanging info, we did, and these are the different things I did at the conference, Instagram follows. We all followed each other on Instagram. We're connecting on there. Facebook friends, I think, is just as cool, depending which platform you're more likely to use. If you do have other social media, LinkedIn, TikTok, whatever, connect on there for sure. Bumping phones, everyone was just like putting their phones together and then it would bump and swap info if you have an iPhone. So that's a good one to put your, you go into your phone and set up your personal profile on your phone, add your photo, who you are, how they can contact you, website, et cetera, so that it does actually, you know, allow people to follow up with you really easily with that little bump, and it shares the right information. Data sharing apps. So a lot of people had apps where they, you know, shared a business card through that app, and then good old physical business cards. We all use them. If you're an actor, make sure the one side of your business card is literally a photo of you. It could be a production still or a photo of your face, but you're an actor, put a photo on your card. The other side should just be your basic business information like usual. So where to meet industry people? Casting workshops. I love casting workshops. I don't know how the union feels about casting workshops, so sorry about that. But I love casting workshops. I think they're incredible. Probably made $150,000 or more from connections I've made in casting workshops. So for me, it's a 10x ROI on my investment. It makes perfect sense. Showcases, absolutely. So where you're paying to kind of do a showcase, if you don't have an agent or manager, they're probably more useful, the most useful. Parties, well, industry parties, film screenings, film festivals, film markets. Film festivals, guys, being the absolute top place that you can meet people. If you had unlimited funds and unlimited time, I would say as an actor, the best thing you can do is get a great agent or manager and then go to every film festival, every decent film festival out there. And I promise your career will explode. Film markets, that's where the filmmakers all sell films to each other. Not to each other, to distributors and sales agents and various territories. Industry conferences like the one I just went to, panels where people are learning things. So filmmaking panels or just industry panels, industry associations. So groups like, in Los Angeles, there's, Australians in LA. In different countries, there are different kind of industry associations where people kind of get together. The unions, for example, plays and live theater, a lot of casting people, a lot of filmmakers go to plays, go check out some theater. I promise you'll meet some people. Classes and seminars, obviously people are much more invested in your career when they've taught you something on a small group basis. I still remember I had this one acting class that I taught, because I don't teach craft, but this one agency brought me in for me to teach my first ever acting class. And I remember every actor in that class and I love them so much and I feel so invested in their journey. And yeah, maybe if I taught like 50 classes, I might not be as much like that. But honestly, casting directors don't teach that many classes. And filmmakers don't teach that many classes. I feel still so connected to all of those people I taught in that class. And I still remember their performances and you'd be surprised. Often we feel invisible when we're in a big class, not a big class, obviously, if there's 50 people there, but I think this class I taught had like 20 people and I love them. I miss them. And you'll find that when you're a student in someone's class, especially if you work with them several times, they'll feel really connected with you as well. Especially if they don't teach classes constantly for years on end, a filmmaker or a casting director. So social media, great place to connect. My friend, actually one of my Secret Actors Society members, Andy, just booked a film opposite Tom Arnold. It's literally her and Tom Arnold on the poster. And she booked it through Instagram. She followed the filmmaker on Instagram and they started chatting and he ended up hiring her. So it's literally her and Tom Arnold in a movie together. Oh, absolutely incredible. And she does not have a massive resume. She's worked. She is so proactive. She reaches out to all the casting directors all the time. She stays in contact and in touch with her network like no one I know. She's connected with this filmmaker on social media and booked a massive film. And members clubs, which I think is kind of the same as industry associations. That was the other thing I did want to say is take a selfie with the person. So when you meet someone and you exchange information with them, do a little selfie, then you get to like have a moment together and then send it to them. So they remember who you are. You're not just a mysterious contact in your phone. I think that's a really good way to kind of stay connected with people. Anyway, that is us. So thank you so much for joining us. First of all, let me just really quickly go through what we just learned. So marketing materials that get you auditions. That was the class we just did. We went through resume, headshots, demo reel, marketing online, exchanging info. So again, thank you so much for joining us. Secret Actor Society is a company that I run. I want to talk about it just for 2 minutes and then we're going to go into the Q&A. So as mentioned, you can get 33% off an annual membership with the code MEAA33. So Secret Actor Society Journey membership includes the Secret Actor Society Journey. It's a 10-part series of long-form courses. It also includes something called the Success Path, where as a business of acting coach, I kind of ask, you know, we ask where you're at in your career. And then once you select your level, it will send you regular action steps. Once you complete a step, 7 days, you tell us, and then 7 days later, it'll send you another action step that you can take to make progress in your career. So you know you're not kind of wasting time. You're actually doing things that are productive. And it also helps you think of things that you wouldn't have thought of, like grabbing your domain name. You know, that's just an easy step. Oh yeah, I should totally do that. I didn't think of that. It comes in, you do it. It might only take, some of the steps take you 5 minutes. Some of the steps might take you a few hours. That's part of the Success Path. It's all included in the membership. The coaching. So I teach monthly coaching, group coaching sessions with the whole membership. We have several hundred members, but only around 20 people show up for the actual live coaching sessions, which is perfect. When it gets over 20, I tend to start adding. At one point, we've kind of, you know, gone through phases of having two sets of classes. It's usually under 20. So it's this relatively small group coaching. Everyone gets a chance to ask their question. It's 90 minutes long. I stay over time. If people's questions aren't answered, I don't care. I'll sit there all morning if I need to. I'm happy to, it's like the highlight of my month. So I don't need to, I want to, it's so much fun. That's part of the community. And then we have classes. So I always invite guests to come in and teach different classes, people who are experts in things that I am not an expert in. For instance, I don't know anything about commercials. I don't know anything about voice acting. Don't know anything about O-1 visas. So we had an O-1 visa specialist come in. You know, there's so many things that I don't know. And we have these amazing experts that come in and teach awesome stuff. I even had a filmmaker come in and teach a class on how to build a pitch package for people, for actors that want to start creating content. We also have casting director interviews. So during COVID, Andrew reached out to 100 of the absolute, we wrote a list of every casting director in the world. We reached out to the top 100. And I was like terrified, and he did it. And we ended up with 25 or so of the top casting people in the world, like the dude that cast Lord of the Rings. I think it was a chick. Actually, I think it was Victoria Burrows, but Carrie Barden, who did like The Help, and just such massive, massive casting directors who we never would have been able to talk to. They all came in and did interviews with us. They're like in their spare room during the pandemic. They didn't have anything better to do. So they're like, yeah, sure, I'd love to come in and talk. And so we've got these really long, we kept them for like over an hour, these really long interviews. And then we asked them all these individual questions. So that's part of the membership as well. It is amazing. It's an amazing series. I highly recommend checking that out. And actually, I think you can sign up just for the casting director interviews for free, just to watch like the casual chats. That's on the main Secret Actor Society website. The video vault, so we have over 3,000 classes, interviews, coaching videos, a bunch of stuff. Basically, we brought in 25 experts and just asked them every question we could think of in their area. So those question and answers, we've separated them into separate videos. So you can just search one question and get one answer, really fast, concise information. The resources is this massive online database of spreadsheets and PDFs and all that jazz, everything, you know, agent and manager lists. They're actually done in order, they're numbered. So they're very interesting to kind of check out. And then obviously the forums, we don't use the forums a lot, to be honest. I'll probably going to create like maybe a WhatsApp group or a Slack or something. But the forums are really awesome for keeping accountable. So we use them after the Zooms so people can put their action steps in there. But the forums are also really good for if you have a question, and I always answer questions on the forums. And if you email me a question, I will direct you to ask it in the forums if that's okay. So everyone can learn from it unless it's personal. So then that allows everyone to kind of learn from any question that people have about their careers. And then the journey is part of it. And I'll leave this journey page up as our final page. That is a series of 90-minute-ish classes They are all in the membership. They cost, they're part of the membership. If you were to buy them independently, there's just $69 each. So they're still very reasonably priced. Obviously, you have just experienced the marketing materials class, but they're all very content rich, very similar to what we just learned here. So I'm going to stop my screen share now, come back to you, and I'm here for Q&A literally for as long as you guys need. I want to make sure everyone's questions get answered. So honestly, if we stay on for an hour, I don't care. I'm here and I've got my morning allocated, or my afternoon, I guess, at this point, allocated. So thank you.
Now, Kim, they've got some questions here in the chat.
Well, let's go through what's in the chat first.
Yeah, sure. There's something here from Denisa about what marketing advice would you give for someone who took years away from acting and is just getting back into it?
You know what, Denisa? I actually asked this question because I just took a few years off to have a baby. I asked this question of Mark Fincannon, who is he is the top casting director in Atlanta. And his response was, let everyone know you've come back. Like, just get some footage that looks current. So the way to get footage is, to be honest, that demo reel class that I referenced. It walks you through how to get footage if you don't have any current footage, and allows you to, it kind of just shows you the different ways to do it, technically how to do it, what steps to take to get footage that does look industry appropriate and current in the current day. His advice was, get your marketing materials current. So do a new headshot shoot, get some new footage, and then reach out to everyone in the industry. And you can use it as an excuse, and actually as a really good excuse to reach out to say, hey, and I'm going to do the exact same thing. I'm going back to LA in 2 weeks, and I'm going to do the exact same thing in LA. I'm going to go through every casting director that I've ever auditioned for. I'm going to reach out to them and just say, hey, thank you so much for auditioning me in the past. I just wanted to let you know I spent 4 years in Australia and now I've moved back to Los Angeles. I'd really love to work with you. And his recommendation was literally to say, I've just done 12 rounds of IVF and had a baby, and, you know, to tell them what's actually been going on. Cause people, especially these days, people understand casting directors are very emotionally evolved people, I think. And the reason for that is they see so many different parts, slices of life. They see so many different parts of people's personalities. And so they will understand. Just reach out and say, this is what's happened. Here's my stuff. I'd love if you keep me in mind for roles.
There's a question here about, do you have a recommendation to discover your brand?
Look, your brand, your public facing brand of who you are is essentially who you want to be seen as in the world. So some celebrities, you know them as, oh, this is the celebrity that's always looking after people in third world countries. This is the celebrity that's not on, doesn't have any socials and is always, promoting animal welfare or whatever, you know. So what you want to be seen as in the world doesn't have to be a reflection of the characters that you can play. It can just be a reflection of who you are and who you would like to be. Now, if anyone's done the Landmark Forum, it is incredible. If you haven't done it, I strongly recommend it. It's just a 3-day weekend workshop. But one of the biggest things they sort of do is pull away all of the layers and you figure out real quick exactly who you are and exactly who you want to be. And part of that is to write down all of the characteristics that you want to have as a person and choose to be that character on a daily basis so that you aren't stuck in who you were yesterday or even who you were 5 minutes ago. Now, if you build up, if you create the character, so I would write down the character of who you want to be, because I think for most of us, who we want to be as a public persona is probably reflective of who we would like to be as a human being. So if you write down the values that you would like to attain and that you would like to hold dear and that you would like to live by, if you write down the, the way you'd like to dress in public, who cares? I walk around in my underwear 90% of the time. When I leave the house, I wear clothes. So, you know, it's in public, you know, what would you like to wear? How would you like to present yourself? How do you want to interact with people? Do you want to be a patient person, or do you want to be someone who's a little less attainable, someone who's a little more closed off? Do you want to be on red carpets being very friendly and open and smiling, or do you want to be a bit more mysterious? There's nothing wrong with either, but either will lead to a different image. So I would say write down that character and who you want to be as a human being, and then figure out which elements of that that you'd like to take into the public. And then kind of just follow that, lead with that would be my very short answer on something that really should have a whole class dedicated to it. Maybe we'll put that on the list, Alex.
We get a lot of negative feedback about branding.
Oh, that's right. So
it's the one thing that actors have got really stroppy business about. So we've avoided it, to be honest.
Oh, you know what? I did teach a class on this. Do you remember? I think I did it for you, Alex. Social media marketing and your public image. I think the public image bit is a whole branding chunk. I think it's like 40 minutes on branding.
Yeah.
But okay. I put public image to not be off-putting, but it's about your public image. Check out that class. If you're anyone who's a member, check out that class. Social media, I think it's social media press. Oh, social media press and publicity. That's what it's called. But there's a public image bit of that. So you guys, if you do the free trial at Secret Access Society, you could watch that class and then end before you have to pay. So I would go in. If I didn't have any money, I would go in, watch all the classes and then leave. But there's then, you know, obviously if you want to stay for the community and all the other stuff, there's a lot of content. So you'd have to pretty much sit down for a solid week and watch things. Anyway, what else? Hey.
Hi there, Kim. First of all, thanks so much. Wish I'd known all this like a few years back. It would have made it so much more helpful and easier. It was so useful. But going back to headshots and having different headshots, because I'm always like changing looks. So I have like long hair and beard, but then equally I could play like, you know, short cuts, you know, clean cut. And it was different to how you look, but then you arrive, obviously you might not want to cut your hair because another role could come up and you've not booked that one. So I just wondered how it, so not to look, so they're not disappointed. How do you got any advice on how to play that? Or
Yeah. So look, with hair color for, you know, for the broader group, hair color, you want to generally have headshots that are the current color of your hair, but the reality is hair color can be changed so quickly.
Yeah.
You know, so that's not an issue. I love the look you have right now. Can you click it back to your headshot for a second?
Yes, that's more like clean.
Yeah, it's like so clean cut.
Yeah.
The look you have right now is like way more interesting and castable. So I think this medium length for you might be really good because it can kind of go either direction. If they want to book you on a series where they need you to have long hair, they can book you and say, okay, grow your hair. Stop cutting your hair. If they want to book you on, you know, with something a bit shorter hair, they know they can cut it. Right? And then you just decide if the project is big enough to be worth stuffing with your hair. You could even say it in your slate, you know, hey, you know, obviously happy to cut my hair for this role. That's it. You don't have to address it in any way. It's about being honest and open and concise, especially when it comes to cutting hair. It's a lot harder to grow hair. So this is where you kind of run into a little bit of trouble if you're submitting a long hair photo, but you've cut your hair short, which is why I recommend maybe leave it at this medium length as much as you can.
Yeah, okay. That's good advice.
Cool.
Thanks so much, Kim.
Kim.
Okay. Yeah. And then just really quickly, when you were talking about the three Instagram topics or whatever you said, do you like list them or you just mean in your mind, you know, that's the three things you're covering?
Yeah, in your mind. So, I think mine is adventure, inspiration, entertainment. And it's funny because it's been so long. For me, I've found that it makes a nice cohesive profile. And it could be travel, it could be food, it could be exercise, health and fitness, whatever. But I think people's brands get a little murky when they start straying too far off topic. So just kind of stick with what your brand is. For instance, I don't have anything of me teaching on my Instagram page, my personal Instagram. I do actor tips and stuff on the Secret Actor Society Instagram, but I don't do it on my personal Instagram because I want it to be separate from my teaching, acting and teaching, two separate things. So I don't kind of smush it all in together like I think a fair few other educators do. But then that's who they, you know, put themselves out there as.
Cool. Thank you.
And make it things that excite you. Make it when you see hear those three branding words, you should be like, yeah, that's me. That's what I do.
Yeah. Thanks.
Cheers. Thanks. So, hello.
Thank you. Oh. Kim, that was amazing. Thank you for sharing all of this stuff with us. When you're talking about demo reels and putting your strongest clip on first. So my background as an actor is I did a truckload of stuff in my 20s and into my 30s. And then I kind of disappeared. I've run businesses and traveled and done all sorts of things. And I'd kind of wanting to come back. So all the roles that I'm getting now are just little things here and there, and they're not particularly impressive for a reel. So it's, you know, and I kind of go, when I put the current stuff up there, I just get more roles that are a little bit like that.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. So look, it's so funny because I feel so weird like constantly talking about the courses, but honestly, do the demo reel course. It's like I said, you can sign up for the 7-day free thing and watch it. It's a 2-hour course. Mm-hmm. It will cover how to build your footage from scratch, what to do, the formats that are needed, the technical specs, the editing, everything that you could possibly need. Honestly, like I'm so proud of that class. It's so good. And it is just such a big answer to answer in, you know, 2 or 3 minutes right now. Yeah. But the long and the short of it is you need new footage. So yeah, you absolutely need new footage. If you don't want to build a reel where you're shooting footage, there is nothing wrong with getting a few scenes from projects that you really want to be in and shooting those scenes as self-tapes. Just make sure that all the technical stuff, the sound, the lighting is really, really good. But people are absolutely being pitched with self-tapes these days. So if you've been in the business world, you've been running businesses, you might have the budget to go to a taping company and pay them to tape you in scenes. Just make sure when you're watching the other footage that those companies have shot, that it feels like you're watching a real movie, you know, that it feels legit, because a lot of them are just junk. So make sure they're a really good one. Use your judgment. Don't just go, oh, well, they've said they're a demo taping company, so I'll use them. Like, it doesn't work that way. So just find a really solid one or produce a short film or a web series or something that is high quality and that can highlight your best assets as an actor and what you offer to the market today, because you can't use your old footage and you do need new footage. You do need footage.
That answers that. I have one quick follow-up question, and that is, do you think we need current profiles on Showcast and Casting Networks and AT2?
Yes. So whatever your reps are telling you to be on, but really, Casting Networks and Showcast. No worries. And I'll go to questions that are in the side chat in a moment, but I'll just do
It's Shrestha.
Shrestha. Oh, that's really easy. It's a much easier listen than it is a read.
It's like an Indian name. Like, I'm from India, so I recently shifted to Australia and I can speak like 8 languages, so it's like easy. So
awesome. Hey, you should reach out to, I just did a film where like 70 of the crew and most of the cast were Indian. They're, I think, Melbourne based. You should totally reach out to the producer, Aniket, and just be like, Kim told me to introduce myself to you. But they just did an Indian Australian co-production starring like Guy Sebastian and a bunch of like Indian celebrities. But you should reach out because they want to create Indian Australian content.
Yeah, thank you so much. So yeah. I'm actually based in Canberra. So Sydney happens to be nearer to me. I've just been here for like 6 months. So I've just started. But previously to this, I have worked in a series back for Netflix in India and a few more. The only problem that I'm facing right now is the language barrier, because most of the stuff that I've done, it's all on IMDb, but it's all like in Hindi or Indian, like English and Hindi mix and all of that. So I do have like a lot of work to show, but then I do not really know how to project it to this new market that I'm trying to be a part of. So would you enlighten me on the same? Like, what should be my pathway to that?
So nuanced, but my short answer is you need to make it clear to people at a glance that you have a big profile in India. Make it sound way bigger than it is. So
whatever press you have in India, red carpets in India, any of that stuff. And if you don't have it, see if you can go back and do it. Like, whatever, yes. Just make, because I like to do that with America. I play Australia and America off kind of against each other. So I, when I'm in America, I make it sound like I'm a big deal in Australia. So you can kind of do the same thing. But look, primary focus, nutting it down, figure out a way. And maybe for you, it's probably production stills from your Indian productions. Put them up on your IMDb. Maybe for you, you are a rare case where a website would be really useful. So you can show people stuff that, that they're not going to know just by meeting you. You can, yes, your reel should be mostly English, but it's, there's nothing wrong with using some foreign language stuff if it's really good acting and you can see really strong acting as you're watching it. So don't be afraid to do that. Make sure your first scene on your reel is in English, and then, and honestly, shoot some scenes, whether it's self-tapes or, because you just, you have to, all it is, guys, you don't have many acting marketing materials. It's headshot, resume, demo reel. That's it. Headshot, resume, footage. And that's it. The rest is just kind of icing on the cake. But go to film festivals, meet people. That list of places to meet people, go and meet people in the industry, because that is your top priority. There's only, like I said, there's only 20 casting directors. They are the gatekeepers. Australian agents are very tricky to get into if you're not recently graduating from a school, because they already have so many clients. So your work on the ground is going to be where your work comes from.
Yeah, right. I get you.
No, and the more work you can do to build your network, the better.
Yeah, thank you so very much. Thank you.
And your top priority, all of this stuff that I'm talking about, should be 20% of what you focus on. 80% of your energy needs to go to craft. Now, if you didn't do like a 5-year class or whatever, or sorry, a 3-year course or a 2-year course where you're doing 4-5 days a week, you probably need to be in a class 2 days a week right now, even if you've been acting for years, because you need to stay in shape. If you're auditioning several times a week, maybe you just do class once a week, whatever, but your craft is everything, especially in Australia where the auditions are few and far between. Out of those 4 auditions I did yesterday, 3 of them for Los Angeles, because I told my agent I'm coming back, and all of a sudden I'm getting a 10 trillion auditions coming through, and it's reminding me of just how much work is out there. But in Australia, your auditions outside of commercials are few and far between. So I also would recommend reaching out to people to get commercial representation, because most of the casting directors in Australia do commercial auditions as well. And that's your way of building up a relationship with them. And also do casting workshops with the casting directors that you're able to access, so you can build the relationships. But your work has to be stellar. Like, your craft should be 80% of what you focus on. It should just be about becoming a better actor, you know, crawling around like a cat in some room with a bunch of randos, doing improv classes, like all the freaky deaky stuff, community theater, everything to get your craft up to scratch, because that is honestly what's going to keep you working in the industry. No, I only put the year of production on my resume for things that are very recent, just so I can be really clear that, hey, I've worked recently. But for the rest of it, actually don't put the year of production, because it never looks good. It's always a couple of years ago. So I wouldn't do that unless it's just the, you know, your most recent ones. Cool. Awesome.
Hi, Kim. Thank you so much for this. It's been really great. So my question, though, is that I have always worked in front of and behind the camera. So recently I created a web series. Well, actually, it was 8 years ago now. Created a web series that was Shakespeare focused, which was extremely successful, and that was wonderful. But now I get certain casting people saying things like, oh, are you still acting? When say, because they know me now as directing and writing and adapting.
Yeah.
There's been a suggestion that I keep a writing directing section on my website because of the fact that that's showing that I've done stuff recently, even though it's my own stuff. I'm a bit leery about it. Should I be killing that section if I just want to focus back on acting?
Look, no, I think everyone's a multi-hyphenate these days. I think if you have a website that you are sending most people to from an acting point of view,
have that as the prominent featured thing on the main page of the website, and then absolutely have a writing directing link. I don't think anyone's going to be like, oh no, she's a, you know, it's just at Scream Forever. Everyone's a multi-hyphenate. So I don't think there's anything wrong with it at all. Just don't, if you don't want to focus on that, don't have it as the main page. But, you know, make sure that when you are sending people to, for your writing and directing, that they have a, they have that specific link, so they're not landing on your acting homepage. You could also have it where it goes to your homepage and then you can just click acting, filmmaking, you know, yeah, writing, directing, and yeah, have two very big prominent buttons, and they can just choose which site to go into. And that way it's two completely separate feeling sites.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
That's all you need. That's exactly what it should be. I think that's perfect. Okay. I am here to make sure everyone knows that I am still a local hire in Australia, even though I'm moving back to Los Angeles. So when you see me in LA on my socials, don't think I'm not going to offer her two scenes in this movie because I don't want to have to fly her back. I wanted to make sure everyone knew. So you can be very specific about your needs and, you know, why you're reaching out. So, hey, I'm just reaching out. Few people have thought I've quit acting because I'm writing and directing. I wanted to be clear. I am very much still acting and pursuing it and training and focused on, you know, getting acting work, whatever.
It's been really, really helpful. So thank you so much for that.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Cheers.
Yeah. Have a great day. Thanks. You too.
Thanks.
I had a quick question, which is, if you offer sort of booking in a private session,
I do, you know, the reason I built Secret Actor Society was so that people wouldn't have to pay for coaching. But if people can afford to have and would like to work with a private coach, I'm absolutely definitely available for sure.
Okay.
Thank you. Cool.
Thank you again to everyone who was able to be here today. And Kim, my goodness, thank you. Can't thank you enough. Kim has done these almost every year now, and it's been a wonderful addition to our program. So thank you so much, Kim, and of course to Media Super, and I'll hand you over. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. Love you, Alex. Bye. Thanks.
That's really wonderful.
Cheers. So, thank you.
No words to say how wonderful you are. So so generous. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much, and have a great day, you guys.
Yeah, bye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast, brought to you by our principal sponsor, Media Super, and the Equity Foundation. For more information about the work we do, visit equityfoundation.org.au or follow Equity Foundation Australia on Facebook and Instagram.